For WNCW, I'm Joe Kendrick with this report on refugees in our region. How many refugees the United States admits and where they're from has become a hot topic of debate and looks to continue for some time. Whom our government decides to admit and the process it uses is not commonly well known. Who are the people we're bringing into our country and why? How does the resettlement process work and where do refugees wind up living in our region? I researched some basic facts of refugee resettlement and with WNCW newsman Paul Foster produced this story about the issue. First, some of the basics. The United States has a long history of welcoming people fleeing from persecution and war. In fiscal year 2016, we took in some 85,000 refugees from all over the world. Some 3,500 of those went to North Carolina. This number is set by the president, and in the fiscal year 2017, the target number is 110,000. Many of these people are finding new homes in our region, mostly in urban centers like Greenville, Spartanburg, Knoxville, and Charlotte, which will take in some 800 refugees this year. Refugees are registered with the United Nations before being vetted and interviewed by the United Nations, the U.S. State Department, and the Department of Homeland Security. This process can take the better part of 2 years. Federal funding pays for agencies to help settle refugees once they arrive in the country, agencies like Carolina Refugee Resettlement Agency in Charlotte. I spoke with Executive Director Marcia Hirsch about the process.
The refugee resettlement process has a very specific set of guidelines. And the first part of that process is that someone has to have fled from their home country to a second country from fear of persecution in a set variety of categories and have registered with the United Nations. There is no one that will come into the U.S. without having first registered with the U.N. Once someone has registered, that waiting process begins. And once a decision's made that a particular group of people will begin to be resettled en masse, then the United Nations is forwarding those people's names to the State Department and to the Department of Homeland Security. And an intensive vetting process begins. And that vetting process alone can take up to a year and a half to complete. That includes medical, security, and background checks. And if each individual in the case passes through that process, then the United States government and the State Department will certify them to gain entry into this country.
Paul Foster spoke with Ann Corcoran, editor of Refugee Resettlement Watch, about the recent history of resettlement and how our government runs the system.
The gist of how it works, and I have to say it's sort of complicated, it's a result of the Refugee Act of 1980, which was a Ted Kennedy, Joe Biden, and Jimmy Carter project, put this law in place. And basically, there are 9 federal resettlement contractors. The United Nations picks our refugees, and the 9 contractors have many subcontractors across hundreds of U.S. towns and cities. There are refugee programs in 49 states. The bottom line is that the majority of refugee resettlement is paid for out of the U.S. Treasury or state and local taxpayers. This is not, I want to emphasize, even though some of the refugee resettlement contractors are church-sounding groups, they are mostly funded by the U.S. taxpayer. These are not groups passing the plate in church for this program. I mean, they may get a little of their funding through that, but they are not religious charities in the way people think they are. The president decides each year in September how many the United States is going to take from around the world the following year. It's at the Congress. The United Nations picks the refugees. They come in through the U.S. State Department. They're screened with Homeland Security, and then they're divvied up between these 9 contractors, and then there are hundreds of subcontractors.
I spoke with Takur Mishra, Health Promotion Case Manager at Carolina Refugee Resettlement Agency, and he told me his story of how he became a U.S. citizen after his family was expelled from his home country of Bhutan in the 1980s.
The government started what was called a one nation, one people policy. And my family was not part of the one people. So the government started cracking down on people following a different religion. So my family, including other thousands of people who were Hindus and then who speak Nepali, were the major target of the government. My father was imprisoned because he was accused of being a terrorist. And he was put into prison, tortured both mentally and physically, quite severely for 90 days. And on the 91 day of his imprisonment, he was asked to sign what was called a voluntary migration form, which was interestingly written in a language my father did not understand. So he signed that voluntary migration form, and then later we found out that we had to leave the country within 3 days. That's what he signed. So that's how we got out of Bhutan.
You stayed for very many years in a refugee camp in a country that essentially did not want you there.
I stayed in a refugee camp only about 300 miles away from where I was born. And this was in Nepal. So we stayed there for close to 20 years under some harsh situations, such as like not having any kind of opportunities there. The healthcare system was so bad. We did not have access to almost anything, such as an access to a better healthcare system, an access to healthy food, and access to a better education. We lack all these things. One of my nieces died because she could not fight a battle against what elsewhere would probably have been a treatable pneumonia, because she did not have access to a better medical system there.
One common refrain from detractors of U.S. policy on refugee resettlement is that the money could be better spent elsewhere. Here's Paul Foster interviewing Ann Corcoran on that question.
Really, we're bringing in literally hundreds of thousands of people through this program, many from countries that hate us. And you got to scratch your head and say, what is going on here? I think there are driving forces, frankly, without getting in too deep into, like, are there conspiracies? There are driving forces pushing this program. I think that humanitarianism is really just the cover. I think that people who are pushing this want to literally change the demographic makeup of communities. It's about more voters for a certain political party, and all sorts of other reasons for wanting to bring diversity and bring change to communities. The logical explanation to your local folks is that you're exactly right. Why aren't we taking care of our own poor people first? We aren't. Sad reality of this program.
Tune in at this time tomorrow morning for the conclusion of our two-part series on refugees in our region. For WNCW, I'm Joe Kendrick.